This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Hey, this is Chris Spencer from Unsane and Human Impact. You're listening to The Vinyl Guide.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 346 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And this week, we have a very special guest, Mr. Chris Spencer of Unsane, Human Impact, and Lamb Unlimited. Now, many of you know Unsane is a phenomenal band. It's heavy, it's brutal, it pulls no punches, and not just with their music, but with their album covers as well, which are generally very heavy on the blood theme. Not for the faint-hearted, but it's a pretty appropriate packaging for the music that's contained inside. Now today, Chris talks to us about his musical history, the Unsane records, the collectibles, the singles, the amazing story of the improvised munitions test pressing, the controversial album covers, the upcoming reissue of the Unsane debut album, and that can be ordered now at unsane.bandcamp.com. There's no album title, it's just the self-titled, but we can just call it the Train Tracks album. And once you see the album cover, I think you'll know why. I get quite a few emails and comments online of people who want to know how they can help this show. People enjoy the podcast, and that just pleases me to no end, and people asking how they could help. Well, it's very easy. You can always join our Patreon community, patreon.com/vinylguide. You can pledge a couple of dollars per month, $5 or $10, whatever you can afford. I always put extra stuff up there. I put high resolution files. So if you want to help out the podcast, just go to patreon.com/vinylguide, sign up, and you can enjoy all the extras. Plus, if you want to go one further, you can always jump up on iTunes or wherever you get these podcasts and just give us a good rating. 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars. You can always say something nice. That is always appreciated. That's a huge help as well. And finally, you could always pick up something from our sponsors, especially Groove Washer, groovewasher.com, the best record cleaner out on the market. They've been with us for about 5 years now. I still use their product every day, and they're a great group of people who love their records just like we do. That's groovewasher.com. All right, and with that, I'm going to quit faffing around and let's get to the interview. Here we go with Chris Spencer of Unsane and Lamb Unlimited.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you, man?
I'm good.
I hear you just got back off a tour. Was that your first post-COVID tour?
Yeah, that was the first European thing. We've done with Unsane, with a new lineup, we've done like the early shit, and we played, we did like a New York show, and actually, you know, Human Impact did do a short thing, but that was really when Omicron was kicking in. So it was really just painful, you know, like it was like middle of winter. I think it was February or something. We're heading out to Minneapolis. So
why would you head out to Minneapolis in February?
Yeah, I know. Not the best idea. But, you know, we had, I think it was like 5 different tours that were canceled and rescheduled. And, you know, so it's kind of like, at that point, we were kind of like, oh, let's take what we can get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Omicron was kicking in. Everybody at the show was in a mask and trying to social distance. And, you know, it was just really like, oh, my God, not very conducive to a rock show, you know.
Absolutely. So are things kind of somewhat back to normal, or are they still very different?
Things are pretty much back to normal, at least this last European tour, although airlines are having a shit ton of trouble. A lot of bands like, who was it? Poison Idea? I think it was, no, not Poison Idea. It was, Suicidal Tendencies. Their guitar player didn't get his guitar, you know, they're like losing luggage, and airlines are having a lot of issues. And then a lot of people are catching COVID during a tour. So like our keyboard player, Jim, caught it, and we had to cancel the last 6 shows and just hole up in Paris for a week. But none of the rest of us caught it, just him. But I had it like a few months ago. Yeah.
I'm getting ready to get on a plane next week, and I'm trying to avoid anyone who's got it. And it seems to be this whole other wave is hitting. And so, I don't know, I feel like a recluse at the moment, just So, look, it sounds like you may know a little bit about this show. On the Vinyl Guide, we celebrate records. We're collectors. We're nerds. In fact, yeah. Speaking of Minneapolis, I don't know if you can see my screen here, but I just...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I can.
I just got this beauty from our friend Tom Hazelmeyer.
Yeah.
We look to celebrate vinyl records and physical form media and collectibles, that sort of thing. So I guess the first question, are you a bit of a record nerd? Do you have a record collection?
I do. Yes, I do. I don't know if I'm really that much of a nerd, but I definitely like vinyl and I got a bunch. And, you know, I just kind of collect what I can when I'm on the road. You know, I have a lot of shit from a lot of different bands we played with and stuff. So.
Okay. Well, describe your collection. Like, what is it?
Most of it is like a ton of garage rock and classic, like Hendrix and all kinds of, like, as much live Hendrix vinyl as I can get for some goddamn reason. I started collecting that. And then just kind of newer shit. You know, a lot of bands I've toured with and played with, a lot of AMREP stuff. And, you know, there's kind of a lot of shit.
So if you're diving into live Hendrix, then you've got a lot of boots and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So do you actively seek those out when you're in a new town? When you go to Minneapolis in February and you need warmth, do you seek out a record store?
The record store. Yeah, I mean, when I can. You know, tour, there's not a lot of time to be hitting record stores, but I try when I can.
Okay. Do you have a most precious record or a couple of records? If a fire broke out in the house and you had to grab a few records, do you know what those would be?
Well, like my mother's original version of the White Album.
Oh, okay.
I know. Yeah,
that's important.
Pressing. I think I might be kind of bummed if I lost that one. So.
Okay. So you grew up in a bit of a musical house, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
What was that like? Like, what sort of music did you hear? Obviously, the Beatles.
My mom was really like Beatles, Stones, Cat Stevens, you know, Carpenters, all kinds of 70s crap, you know.
Oh, believe me. That sounds a lot better than what my parents were playing. My dad was a big fan of polkas.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to nurse a hangover on a Sunday morning, and he's blasting the Hugo Durkenschneider program. So you had at least some decent music around. Did your parents play? Did they have an instrument?
Yeah, my mother's in a bluegrass band when I was a kid. That's kind of how I started playing. I was like 7 and some weird hippie guy showed me a few chords, you know, some guy who had a crush on my mother, you know. Uh-huh. And actually gave her a 1959 00018 Martin, which I still have. Yeah, I know. Kind of ridiculous.
Wow.
It's pretty beaten up, but it's awesome. It's amazing guitar. But yeah, so she, I don't, you know, maybe it's like a 70s thing or, you know, but she got divorced and then started hanging out with a bunch of degenerates, you know. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's where you learned it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I formed.
Now, did you have any other musical aspirations? Like you wanted to be in a band early on, or is that something you kind of stumbled into?
No, totally. Me and my friends used to just hang out in basements that we would turn into rehearsal spaces when we were kids and just fucking just jam all the time. You know, it was just a lot of like we get home from school and just go right in and just play all afternoon. And at one point, I think I was like 14 or 15. I was like, you guys, we can play shows if one of us will sing and nobody wants to sing, you know. So it's kind of weird, you know, when you're a kid, you don't, there aren't many vocalists, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hanging out with the stoner music crowd at my school, you know, there just weren't vocalists. So I kind of just had to do the job, you know, because nobody else would.
Are you still that reluctant vocalist?
No, I kind of like it. It's not bad. I like doing it now. So, you know, it kind of grew on me over time.
So talk to me about those early shows. I mean, how easy was it booking things? I mean, you were teenagers, right? Maybe not even old enough to get in the bar.
Yeah, we would do like when I was in high school, we would do like prom shows, high school shows, just shows that, you know, shows at different schools in the auditorium or something. You know what I mean? Like kind of and then early on. When I was a kid, like in New York, 18 was the age, you know, drinking age, and nobody gave a shit anyway. So you could be pretty young and still get into bars and play and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're first starting out and you're doing like bar shows, generally you're not pulling in many people. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you're, you know, 18, 19 year old kid, and you're kind of like, okay, we'll give this a shot. See how it goes. You know,
were you kind of already doing the foundations of what became Insane? Was it kind of hardcore, or were you doing different types of music? You mentioned playing a prom, and I'm trying to imagine Insane playing a prom.
No. That kind of stuff, like high school shit, was just covers pretty much. You know, like me and my friends would just do covers and just play the high school prom thing and do a bunch of classic rock shit, you know. So
got it. Okay. When did you discover your love for hardcore?
I kind of always loved like punk rock, you know, and noise and just really abrasive stuff. I mean, one of the earliest things that I really loved was was the Beatles Revolution, which is really, you know, it's obviously really noisy. Mm-hmm. So when I was a little kid, I definitely just really liked distorted guitar with a lot of feedback, you know. Then in New York, you know, playing shows in New York, when we first started, it was kind of already sounding the way it does. You know, I have a kind of specific way of doing stuff if I, you know, when I'm writing my own material and I'm not playing covers, you know. So Insane really sounded like Insane, you know, that from the beginning, basically.
How did you go from playing those gigs to, I think your first releases were on Treehouse Records?
We did a lot of touring. We just kind of lived in the van. We were all friends and just kind of hung out and traveled and crashed in cat hair and beer all the time. And we do a lot of touring out to like Minneapolis. We did a lot of winter Canadian touring, strangely enough. So we went out to Minneapolis, and that's where Mark Treehouse saw us play and just offered us, you know, to do a 7-inch.
And so you had packed up the bag. Did you end up finishing high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. Okay. Yes.
So you finished high school, and then not long after got in the van and just started driving around trying to make things happen.
Yeah, I went to, you know, when I was in college, I went to NYU and Sarah Lawrence, strangely enough. The guys, when I went to college, it was kind of like, okay, my roommate Pete, I could teach him some stuff on bass, and then we found Charlie the drummer, because we had heard there was a guy who had a drum kit and a big bag of weed in another building, so we went over and just appeared at his doorstep. And we would do stuff like early on with Charlie. When we first started, we would do kind of stuff like jams like SPK or Throbbing Gristle, kind of, in, you know, noisy, really noisy kind of industrial.
Skinny Puppy,
repetition.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, far out. So what was your plan B? Like, you were going to NYU. What was that other?
Cinematography was kind of my plan B, which actually should have maybe been the plan A. But, you know, I was offered a job at a rental house for 70mm Panavision cameras. And I decided to just get in the van and not take the job.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. You sound like there's a little regret with that.
Well, I just, you know, there's sort of a, you know, are you going to do like something serious? Like, I really didn't think Insane is so noisy. I never thought, like, I constantly asking myself, like, why would people even like this? You know? So, like Pete, our bass player, used to be super psyched if we drove people away when we play live. Like, he was totally into it. We were cab drivers out in Jamaica, Queens, or Nassau County, really. So we kind of had a bad attitude already, you know?
Well, so what you're saying is, if you did take that job, then you may not have lasted long simply because you would have pissed someone off.
Yeah, who knows? Who's to say, you know?
So you connect with Treehouse Records. There's a compilation called Burn, and then there was a 7-inch with This Town and Urge to Kill. Which came first?
Urge to Kill and This Town was pretty much the first one, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And then there was also some European label, Glitterhouse, had also offered us a 7-inch, so we did one with them, too, early on.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if you knew about it, but there was one record called Improvised Munitions, which was actually our first record. But it was kind of a full length. It was only like seven songs. I think it timed in at like 28 minutes or something. But there was this guy, Ernie, at Circuit Records, who offered us a record deal. And so we just recorded that. He came one night at this club, the Pyramid, New York. He came up to me and gave me a test pressing and then just fucking vanished off the face of the earth right after that. So I had this test pressing and Ernie disappeared. I found out later he did a ton of blow and he ended up owing a bunch of dealers money. So who knows what happened? You know what I mean? Like he just vanished. But so I go out on tour. I come home. My junkie roommates have sold all the vinyl that I have in my room. That was like all the first Unsane shit, including the test pressing. Cut to 25 years later, I find out some guy has a test pressing of that record, which it's got to be mine. I don't, you know, but he bought it in like 1990 at a used record store in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. So it took forever, but finally I found that test pressing. We were able to remaster it and press it and get it out.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Hang on. There's a lot to unpack there. So you made a deal with this guy to be able to release some music. You recorded the music, sent it to him. He went as far as to create test pressings and you know, work with some sort of record pressing plant. Who knows if more were made or on the back of that, but at least one. You don't know if anyone else in the band or any other test pressings would exist from that.
No, I kind of thought at the time that, I mean, the guy Ernie would have had one as well. You know, I think there were maybe like three made, but yeah, mine was the only one really, you know, floating around out there anywhere. Ernie just vanished. And I spent years trying to find him.
Now, normally test pressings are blank. There's no band name on them or anything. And it made its way into a used record shop. Did they know it was Unsane or was it just this?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. I'm not sure how, but it was just kind of written on there in pencil on one, you know, one part of the white sleeve there.
Far out. Okay. So I know you guys had just recently reissued Improvised Munitions.
That was like a couple of years ago.
And that's from that test pressing? You didn't have the record?
Yeah, and then remastered. Yeah. So, you know, because obviously if you're going to master from a vinyl, you know, you gotta fix stuff up a little bit. So
that's beautiful story. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So, and that's on your label, Lamb Unlimited. Tell me a little bit about Lamb Unlimited.
Lamb Unlimited was started a while ago. I had this other band called the Cutthroats Nine. And me and a friend of mine worked, this guy, Alan, worked for Alternative Tentacles for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then when he left, I had met him in Berlin somehow. And he had actually, you know, offered to like run a label. So we kind of started it with Cutthroats. Did a couple of records, but didn't really go very far. He moved. He kind of vanished. He stopped helping me out with it. So we kind of shelved it for a while. But then during COVID, my friend and manager, Todd Cote, hit me up. He had nothing to do. So he's like, hey, why don't we try and get all your material back in your hands from all these different labels you've been on? So, I mean, I had tried it, but kind of gotten the runaround from a few of them, but generally we're on labels that are cool people, you know, like AMREP, Ipecac and Matador and everything, you know?
Right.
But then there was kind of this period where Matador got bought out by, or became a subsidiary of Atlantic. So there was kind of this rough period in there where Atlantic had our shit, which they're hard to get through, you know, you can't, but so long story short, sorry. Todd got basically everything back. The Total Destruction is the one that we couldn't get that Atlantic still has. But then he was like, look, I set up John Spencer and Michael Giraffe Swans with this thing Virtual Label, which just basically gets everything out for you and does all your accounting for you and everything. So if you want to resurrect Lamb Unlimited, we could start reissuing all, you know, vinyl of all your early stuff through Virtual Label. And then it's Lamb Unlimited, but through Virtual. So that's what we're doing now. You know, like I was telling you, we did that test pressing. And now we're doing this first self-titled, which I think pre-orders start Wednesday, strangely enough.
And that's the original Unsane, the self-titled with the decapitated head on the front.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yep, sure is.
That one sure sticks out on the record shelf, let me tell you.
Yeah, that was a real that one. I mean, we had some issues getting it over to Europe and when it first came out and stuff. That was our bass player Pete. He had a friend who was a police photographer, mm-hmm. and that guy got pushed onto the tracks by like a kid. And Pete had held on to that picture for years, and then he was like, "Oh, let's use this," and you know, it seemed to kind of sum up, you know, what's inside as well.
Huh. Maybe that's the guy who had the test pressings of improvised munitions.
Yeah, Ernie. I don't know. I don't think Ernie'd be caught dead in a members only jacket, which is what that guy's wearing.
So anyway, just for people who are listening who may not be familiar with this album cover, it's pretty brutal, but it's pretty on brand for Unsane. I mean, come on. So yeah. Do you know anything about that guy that's on the front cover?
No, all I know is that he was pushed and Pete got the picture from the police photographer friend of his.
Okay.
So that's about it. Yeah. I don't know any of the details of the guy himself.
And when you turned in that photo to Matador, I mean, literally a picture of a decapitated dude on the cover. I mean, you had to know that there was going to be some pushback. What was the response like?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VinylGuide10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VinylGuide10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. And when you turned in that photo to Matador, I mean, literally a picture of a decapitated dude on the cover. I mean, you had to know that there was going to be some pushback. What was the response like?
They were cool with it. Yeah, there was from Matador, there was no nothing. They didn't mind at all. You know, because the singles, the Treehouse single just has the Zodiac letter on it.
Yeah.
And then the Glitterhouse one had Pete with a shotgun with chocolate syrup all over him, which is black and white. So it looks like blood. But so we, you know, we had kind of established that, you know, there's going to be some kind of weird violence going on somehow. So they knew what they were in for.
They knew what they were in for. They knew what they signed up for. This is a different level than the Zodiac and chocolate sauce, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So you said that there were issues of it being shipped to Europe. What was the response to that?
Just custom stuff. They just held it up because it was so harsh. So they held on to it, and I think it got stalled out by maybe a month when we first sent it over.
Okay. You wasn't, like, banned in different countries or anything like that?
No, it wasn't banned. No, that would be awesome, but no, it wasn't.
Well, let's get together, everyone, and ban this record.
Well, that's like being vinyl version of Cannibal Holocaust, you know, banned in 30 countries. You could put that on posters and everything. It'd be great.
All right, so you guys are getting ready to reissue this self-titled. I'm assuming it has all the same artwork. Any additional shots, outtakes?
It's all the original stuff. It's remastered, so it really kicks up. It really delivers a lot better than the original. The original had kind of this kind of muffly sound to it, which I'm not sure how, you know, it's just kind of the time. You know, there was kind of a weird production thing at that time where, like, Wharton Tears was doing some Sonic Youth stuff and Dinosaur Jr. stuff and sounded really good, but it definitely could use a little sort of mid-high a tiny bit, you know. So, and Andrew Schneider did it, who did like Blood Run, Visqueen. He's done a ton of Unsane records. Mm-hmm. So he kind of knew what I was looking for, you know.
And where can people order? It's on the Bandcamp?
Yeah, Unsane Bandcamp. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some shipped out. I think Virtual's going to do some, you know, some mom and pop stores and stuff. So
right, okay, all right. And are there any limited versions, special colored versions?
There's one that clear vinyl. There is a blood red version of Improvised Munitions.
Okay.
That's coming out too. But there's a clear vinyl with blood splatter red for the self-title, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see that.
So you've now got access to, you said, all of your music except Total Destruction. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you even have like the Sub Pop singles and everything.
Yeah. We got everything.
Okay. Excellent. All right. And is it the masters, the multi-tracks, all everything?
It really varies. It really varies. There's, you know, we just kind of got the rights back. It's what format we're looking at. Like I had a bunch of DAT tapes and stuff for the first record when we remastered this and everything. So I had like the original DAT stuff for that. It just depends. Some will be possibly CDs, you know, we'll see.
Right.
We'll see what we can get. I have a whole closet full of crap. So I kind of got to go through everything when we get to that record, you know.
Yeah.
Get to the next one.
So even the stuff like the Alternative Tentacles, Wreck, you've got, or is that still kind of under their control?
No, we've got that. Yeah, the only one that we have not gotten back yet, which we will soon, I think. I think the time's basically up, is just the last one, Sterilized.
Right. But that was like, what, 8 years ago or something. So
yeah, I think, yeah. Or 2017, I'm pretty sure. So 5.
AMREP just put out a reissue of Scattered, Smothered, and Covered, which, you know, I've got here in my hands with the beautiful Tom Hazelmeyer lino work or lino cuts. When he goes to put those out, it's just a conversation between you guys. Say, hey, let's do a special version of this.
Tom's a good friend. It's just we told him, you know, we're getting all the shit, all my stuff back, and said, hey, if you want to, you know, repress and do some of your stuff, we're totally cool with it. Because we got a while before we even get to that one. It's going to be a few years, you know? So
you're going in order because you've
got... Yeah, we're going chronologically.
Okay, yeah. Because the Improvised Munitions reissue came out. Okay, yeah, it all makes sense. Are there still vinyl copies of Improvised Munitions and demos available?
Yeah, there are. I think we're kind of waiting on those blood red ones that are coming out.
Okay.
So there's been some issues with pressing plants, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of all this, but that's been going on for, I don't know, 2 years now.
So back to Scattered, Smothered, and Covered. That had a single off it, Scrape, which was the video, I think, of the skateboard wipeouts. Do I have my facts right there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
I understand that was made for less than $200. It may be the cheapest heavy rotation video that was shown on MTV.
Yeah, that's true. That is totally true. But a friend of mine, Thomas Campbell, the guy who made that, we were just kind of hanging out one day watching skate videos. I lived in this art gallery on Ludlow Street in New York back then. And we were just kind of hanging out watching skate videos. And then at the end of it, there was some video that just had bales. And I looked at Thomas and I was like, is it possible to just make an entire video of guys getting hurt and just have like 6 seconds of the band in there? And he goes, oh yeah, I can do that. So he had, cause he's like semi pro skater. He had access to all kinds of footage. He was working at Transworld at the time. So he just had a ton of shit to choose from. But yeah, so $169, I think. Total.
What was that $169 spent on, like pizza or?
Yeah, I don't know. That was just kind of, Thomas just said, give me $169 and here's your video, you know.
Dubbing fees or something. Oh, that's
probably like transfers or, you know, who knows.
That's amazing. So yeah, because I think the Van Halen jump video was made for $550. So you guys have done it for a third of that.
No, there was apparently at that time, there was like, Janet Jackson's management was furious because they weren't showing her video, but they were showing this punk trash, you know, $169 video on heavy rotation. And apparently she was very pissed that she was not getting the exposure she wanted with her $500,000 video, you know?
Yeah. Well, just get on a skateboard, Janet. That's what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that one.
I also came to understand you recently wrote the liner notes for the reissue of Laughing Hyena's Life of Crime. Tell me a bit about what that album meant to you.
Well, I mean, that album is obviously awesome. And we used to, we did a lot of shows with them early on. Like they, the band would, when they came to New York, they generally kind of hit my apartment and just stay with us. Me and Charlie, our drummer, lived in the same apartment. But so I was just around them all the time, and they were a fucking serious live band. They were just incredible, right, at that time. So when that came out, it really kind of put the exclamation point on the whole situation. You know, that that record's really good, and they actually did them totally justice, I thought. So, you know, from having seen them live and just tearing it up every night over and over and over, and then to hear that, I was like, holy crap. So, you know, it's a really good record.
So John stayed with you. Is he a good roommate? Is he respectful, or did he like drink all the milk? And
I don't want to incriminate anybody, but our house was something of a drug den at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Artist Colony on Ludlow Street. It's Aside from the improvised munitions test pressing, what is the biggest collectible of Unsane or Human Impact?
I mean, I kind of see the very first pressing of This Town Urge to Kill as you know, that was like a Mark Treehouse thing. But he kind of, he did this first one, which strangely enough, it's kind of hideous, but it's on like this peach paper. And I had him, I was like, well, when you repress, let's go with gray, you know what I mean? But that was kind of, that was that and the Vandal X Sub Pop single, I think were both of those are kind of the, you know, those are ones that I personally, even after my junkie roommates sold all my shit when I was out of town, I went back and found those later, you know, specifically to have those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I know with that single, if there were some different colors, I think the rarest the one I look for is the gold one, which I think there was a couple of maybe 200 copies or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, super limited.
Yeah. And the Zodiac text on it, is that direct from Zodiac or is that leveraging the Zodiac code to say something different?
Oh, no, I just took the letter from the, of the Zodiac and just put it on there. But then I changed the letters underneath in the middle. And it says songs that Zodiac taught me.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. All right. I can see this now.
So it's, I actually changed some of the letters on there. And it was funny, man. We got like, I mean, I lived in this crappy ass basement place on Clinton Street in New York at the time, like by the garbage and shit. But I was getting like, I got a letter with double postage and everything saying, I'm coming to get you. I'm going to kill you and blah, 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 and all this shit. Which is somebody, I think, you know, doing a copycat of the Zodiac Killer. I couldn't imagine anybody wanting to come down into our gross ass basement and, you know, and kill us for using his letter, you know, so.
Yeah, I guess you got to expect kind of some kind of crazy people if you're writing the lines like you guys do, especially with cover art and things like that. You're pushing the boundaries. You got to expect some wildness on the other side of it. Any particular stories of people taking it a little bit too far?
No, not really. I mean, I mean, there's the one, I don't know. Some of the shoots have been really weird where, because we call it a blood run, and I go buy a ton of blood, and then we go to different places in New York and just kind of hose shit down, and it's real blood, so it smells, and you know, and you kind of set up the whole situation, and we've had to like run from the cops while doing that and that kind of crap. But there's been no like weird adverse reactions to the artwork, you know what I mean? Nobody's like so manic about it that they're gonna, you know, try and cut my head off or something, you know.
Okay, let's go back to this blood run thing. I haven't heard about this. So you do a show and you get real blood and spray the crowd, spray everything.
Is that no, it's not a show. Okay. No, I would get like I had a bunch of photographer friends, worked at like the New York Post and all this stuff. So these guys get like three or four guys, friends of mine. And then I just go and I kind of location scout, try and find a spot to do it. And then go down there and just hose everything down with blood. And these photographers, I tell them kind of what I'm thinking of in terms of the framing and what the picture should hopefully look like. And then they just take as many pictures as they can until we got a bolt, which usually is probably about 10 or 15 minutes. Because it's just gross, you know? So, and people start noticing what you're doing. So we had to kind of get out.
All the stray cats start showing up and
yeah, don't even lick in the sidewalk. You know?
Dear Lord. All right, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide, sharing all those amazingly crazy stories about various recordings and cover arts and everything. Unsane is this band that I've always followed initially because I was just shocked. I had to pick up the record, this crazy photos and this big, bold, brutal logo. I knew what it sounded like before I heard it, and I was absolutely right and absolutely delighted. People, go to unsane.bandcamp.com, pre-order the Unsane debut album, the one with the train tracks. You'll see it when you get there. There's also copies of Improvised Munitions and Demo. And if you could find a copy of the AMRAP Scattered, Smothered, and Covered recent reissue with the Tom Hazelmeyer artwork, I'd highly recommend that as well. Of course, follow Unsane on various social medias, see them when they're live, and also check out Human Impact. Are you going to be doing more Human Impact touring over the year?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we got more stuff to do. We're doing the Unsane thing in October, November, and looking at doing a new Human Impact record.
Oh.
So we're going to get started on that pretty quick here.
Far out. Well, that is phenomenal. Yep. Okay, well, keep us posted. Happy to see what you have coming up next. Thanks again, Chris.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, Dave.
That was awesome. Chris, you're welcome back anytime. Again, everyone, pick up a copy of the Unsane debut album on vinyl. The reissue is available now at unsane.bandcamp.com. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Share them out on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter. However you can help get the word out on The Vinyl Guide podcast is much appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.